A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about DistroBox, this tool for running Linux distros inside containers on a Linux host. What it actually is, how it works under the hood, and the real killer use cases that make it more than just Docker with a different name. Running Arch's AUR on Fedora Silverblue, getting CUDA toolchains working on immutable distros, isolating messy build environments without spinning up a full VM. And then the bigger question, when do you reach for DistroBox versus plain Docker, Podman, or a proper virtual machine? There's a lot to dig into here.
It's one of those tools where the first time you see it in action, you do a double take. Wait, I just ran yay on Silverblue and the binary landed in my host PH?
It feels like cheating. And I mean that as the highest compliment.
It really does. So let's start with what DistroBox actually is, because the name doesn't quite capture it. DistroBox is a wrapper around Podman or Docker. You pick your backend. That creates rootless containers. But here's the key. It mounts your home directory. It mounts /dev/sys/proc and a bunch of host paths into the container. The result is something that feels less like a container and more like a cruet with a different user land. You're inside an Ubuntu user space, but your files are right there. Your GPU is right there. Your display socket is right there.
The elevator pitch is, it's a workstation in a box that bridges the gap between immutable hosts and traditional Linux flexibility.
And that gap is becoming more relevant by the day. Immutable distros like Fedora Silverblue, OpenSUSE MicroOS, Vanilla OS, they're gaining real traction. The idea is your base system is read-only. Updates are atomic, you roll back cleanly if something breaks. It's genuinely good engineering. But then you hit the wall. You need a package that's not available as a Flatpak. You need a specific version of a compiler toolchain. You need something from the AUR. And the immutable system says no.
DistroBox is the escape hatch.
It's the escape hatch. Here's how it works mechanically. DistroBox uses user namespaces. That's a Linux kernel feature that's been around since kernel 3.8 back in 2013 to map the container's root user to your host user. So inside the container, you appear to be root. You can install packages with apt or DNF or pacman. But on the host, all those processes are running as your regular user. No sudo, no privilege escalation.
Which is why it's rootless. You never touch actual root on the host.
Then it mounts your home directory, so any file you create inside the container is immediately visible on the host. It mounts /run/user/1000, that's where your X11 and Wayland sockets live. It mounts /tmp/.x11-unix for X11 forwarding. It mounts your pipewire or pulse audio socket for audio. And it runs a custom init binary called DistroBox init that handles reaping zombie processes and managing system units inside the container.
It's not just a thin shell script. There's actual init infrastructure in there.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that separates it from plain Docker. Docker containers typically run one process. You Docker run ngx, ngx starts, that's PID1, when it exits the container stops. DistroBox containers are persistent, multi-process environments. You can run a database, a web server, and a desktop app all in the same container, and the init system manages them properly.
The creator here, this is Luca Di Maio, started the project in 2021, written mostly in shell script with some Go components, which is itself kind of beautiful. The thing that makes running Arch on Fedora trivial is mostly bash.
And the design philosophy is worth pausing on. Docker and Podman are built for ephemeral, isolated, single-process workloads. You spin up a service, it runs, it dies, you replace it. DistroBox flips that paradigm. It's built for integration. The container shares your files, your display, your devices. It's not trying to be a security boundary, it's trying to be a convenience boundary.
Which is the first misconception worth busting. DistroBox is not a security tool. It's a workflow tool. If you run untrusted code in a DistroBox container, you're having a bad day. It shares your home directory. A compromised container has broad access to the host.
That's an intentional trade-off. Luca Di Maio has been pretty clear about this. The goal is to make the container feel native, not to sandbox it. If you need a security boundary, you use a VM or you layer on AppArmor or SE Linux profiles. Different tool for a different job.
Alright, so that's the architecture. Let's get into the use cases, because this is where DistroBox goes from clever engineering to something you actually want to install today.
Use case number one is the poster child. You're on Fedora Silverblue. You need a package from the Arch user repository. On a traditional system, you'd be stuck. The AUR assumes an Arch base, and you're on an immutable Fedora. With DistroBox, you run DistroBox, create --image, Arch Linux : latest --name or --box. You enter it with DistroBox, enter or --box. You install Yay, the AUR helper. You pull down your package. Then you run distrobox-export --bin/usr/bin/whatever, and the binary lands in your host PATH via a wrapper script in .local/bin.
That wrapper script is doing something clever. It's not copying the binary out of the container. It's creating a script that runs distrobox enter and executes the command inside the container transparently.
You type the command on your host, it runs in the Arch container. You see the output as if it were native. The latency is negligible because there's no virtualization overhead. It's just a process in a different namespace.
That's the feels like cheating part I mentioned.
Use case number two is where things get really interesting for anyone doing machine learning or scientific computing. Getting CUDA or ROCm toolchains working on an immutable distro.
Because NVIDIA's CUDA toolkit, the full thing, not just the driver, often ships as .run files or .deb packages that assume a writable root file system. And on Silverblue, /usr is read only.
But here's what makes DistroBox shine for this. The container shares the host kernel, which means it shares the kernel modules. The NVIDIA driver, NVIDIA.co, is loaded on the host. The container just needs the user space libraries. And because DistroBox mounts /dev, the /dev/NVIDIA-star-device nodes are visible inside the container. You install libNVIDIA-gel or the CUDA toolkit inside the container, run NVIDIA-SME, and it works. No VFIO, no GPU pass through gymnastics, no second GPU.
This is the second big misconception to bust. People hear GPU in a container and think they need VFIO. They need IOMMU groups. They need to bind their GPU to VFIO PCI and lose host display output. None of that applies here. The container isn't virtualizing the hardware. It's using the same kernel driver the host is using.
The kernel is the same. The device nodes are passed through. You just need the right user space libraries. For AMD, it's the same story, /dev/KFD and /dev/d/DID/render D128 are passed through. Install the ROCm user space stack and PyTorch sees the GPU. Here's a concrete case. A developer on Silverblue needs to build a PyTorch model against CUDA 12.1, but the host has CUDA 12.4. They create an Ubuntu 22.04 DistroBox container, add NVIDIA's CUDA repo, install CUDA 12.1, and PyTorch talks to the GPU through /dev/NVIDIA0. No conflict with the host's CUDA version.
Because the container has its own user space, the host can have CUDA 12.4 libraries, the container has 12.1. They don't see each other. The only shared piece is the kernel module.
NVIDIA's kernel module version requirements matter here. CUDA 12.x requires NVIDIA.co version 535.54.03 or later. As long as your host driver meets that, any CUDA 12.x user space works in the container.
Use case number three is the one that probably saves the most sanity day to day, isolating messy build environments.
Oh, this is the one. You're compiling a large C++ project. It needs LLVM 14. Your system has LLVM 17. You could wrestle with module files and environment variables and hope nothing leaks. Or you spin up a Debian SID container, apt install the exact toolchain, build there, and when you're done, you can delete the container. Zero pollution on the host.
The build artifacts land in your home directory because that's mounted. So you keep the binary, toss the build environment. It's like having a disposable workshop that shares your storage.
It's not just for C++. Python environments, Node.js versions, Rust toolchains, anything where you need a specific set of system libraries that would conflict with what's on your host. The container is disposable by design, DistroBox RM, and it's gone.
Use case number 4 is the distro tourism angle, trying a different distro without dual booting.
This one is just fun. You've always been curious about NixOS and its declarative configuration. You don't want to repartition your drive. DistroBox create /image/nixo/nix:latest-name/nix-test. Now you're in a NixOS environment. You can play with the Nix package manager, test configurations, see if the workflow clicks for you. Same for Void Linux and its Runit init system or Gentoo and Portage. You can even run desktop environments. X11 and Wayland forwarding means you can launch a window manager from inside the container and it appears on your host display.
Which feels deeply wrong the first time you do it. You're running KDE from an Arch container on a Fedora host, and everything just works. The window decorations match your host theme because it's using your host's display server.
The audio plays through your host speakers because the Pipewire socket is mounted. It's seamless. Use case number 5 is the glibc mismatch problem, and this one solves a class of issues that used to require VMs or cruts.
The old binary problem. You've got a proprietary tool compiled against glibc 2.28. Your host has glibc 2.35. It won't run.
Won't run. And the error message is usually something unhelpful about a symbol not being found. With DistroBox, you create an Ubuntu 18.04 container that ships with glibc 2.27 or so, install your binary there, export it to the host, and it runs. The binary sees the glibc from the container's user space, not the host's.
The reverse works too. You want to run something bleeding edge that needs glibc 2.40, but your host is on an LTS release. Spin up a Fedora Rawhide container, and you've got the latest everything.
It's effectively userland versioning without the overhead of a VM. Which brings us to the next big topic. How all this hardware exposure actually works, and where DistroBox fits compared to the alternatives.
We've covered what DistroBox is, and the killer use cases. Let's talk about how it exposes your hardware, because the "it just works" factor here is doing a lot of heavy lifting, and the mechanics are worth understanding.
The core principle is that the container shares the host kernel. That's the single sentence that explains almost everything. Because the kernel is the same, all the kernel-level device drivers are already loaded. The container doesn't need its own GPU driver, its own USB controller driver, its own audio driver. It just needs the device nodes to be visible.
DistroBox mount /dev. So /dev/NVIDIA0/dev/dry/dev/KFD. They're all right there. The kernel mediates access, and because the container processes run as your host user via user namespaces, the same permissions apply.
For NVIDIA specifically, you need the kernel module loaded on the host, that's the driver. Inside the container, you install the user space libraries, libnvidia-gel, libnvidia-compute, the CUDA toolkit if you need it. The container's l.so.conf points to its own library paths, so when a program inside the container calls into the NVIDIA driver API, it finds the container's libraries, which talk to the host's kernel module through the device node. It's elegant.
For AMD, it's /dev/KFDD. That's the kernel fusion driver for compute. And /dev/die/renderd128 for the rendering pipeline. Install ROCm user space, point at the devices, it works.
USB devices are even simpler. You plug in a device, it shows up under /dev/bus/uzzyb in the container because that path is mounted. Webcams appear as /dev/video0. No special configuration, no UDEV rule wrangling. The kernel handles device enumeration, and the container sees the result.
Audio is the one that surprised me the first time. I launched an audio app in a container, and sound came out of my speakers. I was confused for a second.
It's the Pipewire or Pulse Audio socket. DistroBox mount /run/user/1000/pipewire-0, or the Pulse Audio equivalent. The app in the container connects to that socket, sends audio data, and the host's audio server handles the rest. The container doesn't even know what sound card you have. It just sees a socket.
Which is also why it works with Bluetooth headphones, USB DACs, whatever. The host handles the hardware. The container just talks to the audio server.
X11 forwarding works through /tmp/.x11-unix. That's the Unix domain socket for the X server. Wayland uses the wayland_displayEnvironment variable and the corresponding socket. In both cases, the container apps are just clients connecting to the host display server. No VNC, no X forwarding over ESSAH, direct socket communication.
Then there's the system integration, which is where DistroBox init earns its keep.
DistroBox init runs as PID1 inside the container. It handles zombie process reaping. That's the init system's traditional job, but it also manages system services. You can enable services inside the container, and they'll start when the container boots. The container can have its own SSHD, its own cron daemon, its own Docker daemon. That last one is worth highlighting. You can run Docker in Docker or Podman in Podman inside a DistroBox container for nested container builds.
Which is a very specific kind of inception that certain CI pipelines absolutely need.
It works because the container has access to the host's kernel features that Docker and Podman rely on. Cgroups, namespaces, overlay file systems, its containers all the way down.
Now let's put this alongside the alternatives, because that's where the design philosophy really snaps into focus. When is DistroBox the right tool versus plain Docker, Podman, TubiX, or a full VM?
Plain Docker and Podman are built for services. You write a Docker file, you build an image, you run a container that does one thing, serve web traffic, process a queue, run a database. The container is ephemeral. You destroy it and recreate it from the image. State lives in volumes. The container doesn't have your .dot files, doesn't see your GPU, doesn't know about your display.
DistroBox flips every one of those defaults. It's built for workstations. Your home directory is there, your .dot files are there, your SSH agent socket is there. The container persists. You install packages, you configure services, and they survive reboots. You're not rebuilding from a Docker file. You're using the container like a second operating system that happens to share a kernel.
The mental model shift is, Docker containers are cattle, DistroBox containers are pets. You care about your DistroBox container, you customize it. You'd be annoyed if you had to delete it and start over.
Like adopting a feral cat.
And then there's TubiX, which is Fedora's native equivalent. TubiX was introduced in Fedora 34 back in April 2021, replacing an older project called Fedora Toolbox. It's the same core idea, a container that feels like a native environment. But TubiX is more opinionated. It defaults to Fedora-based images. You can use other images, but the tooling is designed around the Fedora ecosystem, and it's tightly coupled to Silverblue's workflow.
DistroBox is distro-agnostic by design. Any image from Docker Hub, Qui, or GitHub Container Registry works. Arch, Ubuntu, Debian, Alpine, Void, Gentoo, NixOS. If there's a container image for it, DistroBox can use it.
DistroBox gives you the choice of backend. You can use Podman or Docker, whichever you prefer. TubiX is Podman only under the hood. Both tools share the same fundamental insight, that containers can be more than service wrappers. But DistroBox is the more flexible of the two.
Then there's the big one. Full virtual machines with KVM and QEMU.
VMs give you kernel isolation. That's the fundamental difference. In a VM, you're running a completely separate kernel. You can run a different kernel version, a different kernel configuration, even a different operating system entirely, FreeBSD, Windows, whatever. You get full device emulation or paravirtualization. The security boundary is strong. A VM escape is a major vulnerability. A container escape, while not trivial, is a much smaller leap.
You pay for that isolation. CPU virtualization overhead, memory ballooning, device emulation. Even with KVM's hardware acceleration, there's a measurable cost. DistroBox is near zero overhead. It's just namespaces. The processes run directly on the host CPU, using the host scheduler, with no translation layer.
The rule of thumb is, VMs for security boundaries or kernel testing, DistroBox for everyday dev workflows where you trust the container but need a different user land. If you're testing a kernel module, you need a VM. If you just need an older Glipsy or a different package manager, DistroBox is the right call.
There's one more thing DistroBox can do that's worth mentioning. The DistroBox Assemble feature. You write a declarative configuration file, an INI file, basically, that defines your containers, their images, their names, any extra packages to install, any binaries to export. Then DistroBox Assemble, Create builds them all at once.
It's the infrastructure as code approach to your development environments. You check that file into your .files repo, and on any new machine, one command recreates your entire containerized workflow. That's useful.
Let's bring this down to earth. Someone's listening. They're on an immutable distro, or they're tired of polluting their host system with development tool chains. What should they actually do?
Three practical takeaways. First, if you're on an immutable distro and you need packages from outside the Flatpak ecosystem, install DistroBox. On Fedora, it's sudo dnf install DistroBox. On Debian or Ubuntu, sudo apt install DistroBox. Start with the Arch on Silverblue workflow as your hello world. Create an Arch container, install something from the AUR, export it to your host. It takes 5 minutes and it'll rewire how you think about package availability. For isolating build environments, DistroBox hits the sweet spot between Docker and VMs. It's lighter than a VM, more integrated than Docker. Use disposable containers for one-off builds. Spin up, compile, DistroBox RM. Use persistent containers for environments you live in daily. Your Python data science setup, your Rust development environment, whatever. Remember the security model. DistroBox is not a sandbox. It shares your home directory, your devices, your display server. Don't run untrusted code in a DistroBox container without additional protection. If you're experimenting with random GitHub repositories or running proprietary binaries you don't trust, either use a VM or layer on SE Linux or AppArmor profiles. The convenience comes with a trade-off.
I think that's the honest summary of the tool. It makes a specific trade-off. Integration for isolation, and for the vast majority of development workflows, that's exactly the right trade-off. You don't need kernel isolation to compile a project or run an AUR helper. You need your files, your GPU, and the different set of packages.
The philosophical shift here is worth sitting with. For years, the Linux desktop conversation has been, which distro should I run? Maybe the future isn't one distro. Maybe it's a thin host that manages containers, each running a different distro optimized for a specific task. Your Arch container for AUR packages, your Ubuntu LTS container for CUDA, your Fedora Rawhide container for bleeding edge toolchains. The host becomes a hypervisor for Linux user lands.
Immutable distros are pushing us in that direction, whether we like it or not. Silverblue, MicroOS, Vanilla OS, they're betting that the base system should be boring and reliable, and all the interesting stuff should happen in containers. DistroBox is the tool that makes that bet pay off.
It's also worth asking, will tools like DistroBox eventually be obsolete? If Flatpak and Snap eventually cover every desktop app, and if container-native development workflows become standard, maybe the different user land use case shrinks. But I think that's a long way off. The long tail of Linux software, the AUR packages, the scientific computing toolchains, the weird build dependencies, that's not getting flat-packed anytime soon.
Even if it does, there's always going to be the person who needs Glipsy 2.28 and can't get it on their host. DistroBox solves a fundamental problem. The kernel is shared, but user lands diverge. That tension isn't going away.
All right, I think we've earned this.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The Peacherino, a wooden flute from New Zealand's South Island, was considered extinct as a living tradition by the 1720s until a single carved instrument was rediscovered in a Canterbury riverbank cache in 1968, reviving interest in its unique dual-voice design. It sounds as both a flute and a trumpet, depending on which end you blow into.
A flute, that's also a trumpet, depending on which end you blow into.
That's either profound or a setup for a joke I'm not going to make.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps. We'll be back with another one soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.